All right, welcome back to the SLC Punk Podcast. This is your host, James Hansen. I'm joined today by Calvin and Jason for our SLC Dunk Chat. Today, we're going to be talking about round two. The Utah Jazz took care of business with the Memphis Grizzlies. After today, we now know who our round two matchup is. It really feels like this is where the rubber meets the road, and we're actually getting the Jazz are getting their first real big test. But anyways, welcome, Calvin. Welcome, Jason.
Yeah, thanks. It's exciting. We've been waiting. I think most people have been expecting this series to happen since the Clippers got their team together. So this is exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long wait since game five. So I'm really excited. Looking forward to finally getting more Jazz basketball.
Oh, me too. I agree. Well, and kind of going off what you just said, the Jazz, I mean, I think the biggest question mark for the Jazz in this series, I mean, besides, and we can talk about what you do with Kawhi, but that's one of the biggest things, but also just Mike Conley. I've been Googling minor hamstring injuries today. I've been searching the web to see if anyone has any sort of news or notes with Mike Conley, and there's nothing out there. And I think the big question mark for Utah is Conley. At the end of the game, Mike Conley spoke with the media, which was a good sign. I think Tony Jones made a good point when he said that if it was a really bad injury, they might not have had him speak. And because the Jazz are notoriously kind of tight-lipped about things and injuries especially, them having Mike Conley speak meant that they're probably not too worried about it. But it's enough that, you know, Jazz fans have been feeling anxiety. Do you guys think that – I mean, I guess what's your guys's take on the Mike Conley injury? Do you think he's going to be okay? Do you think is it something that we should be worried about?
It's one of those things where it feels like he's just on thin ice, where you're going along and it feels like everything's perfect and he'll probably play decently, and then just randomly, you know, kind of like in game five where you didn't feel like it was an issue, but then all of a sudden he just goes out and he's gone. And that may be the case here. He'll be putting up a great game, and then all of a sudden hamstring goes, and you know that could be his season, depending on how bad it is. So obviously I'm not a doctor or any medical expert, so you just kind of got to go based on what people are saying, which can be kind of hard to draw conclusions from.
Yeah, the part that's making me a little optimistic is Conley's quotes himself on the injury, because this one doesn't hurt as bad as last time, which kept him out for a few weeks, which is obviously a good thing. And it is interesting, though, that the Jazz, they've never like put an actual name to it. They've just said right hamstring soreness all through the season. But this time they actually said a minor hamstring strain. I don't know if that's a better or worse thing, but it seems like it might be a little different. Hopefully what Mike's saying is that this one's just not as bad as the last ones.
Yeah. And I kind of agree with both of you. And I think, you know, Mike's quotes are, we know that Mike is a warrior and Mike's going to go out there if he can. We've seen Mike in the past get like, you know, he has those famous photos where he has that bruised up face and the mask, and he's played through all sorts of different things. So Mike is tough and Mike will play unless he absolutely can't. I do think that one thing we're going to see is the Jazz probably need to try to hide him a tiny bit if they can on the defensive end. It feels like Mike had some really big moments guarding Ja Morant, and I wonder if chasing around Ja Morant really, you know, put that strain on him that, you know, might have caused it a little bit. And so I wonder if they can hide Mike Conley a little bit, especially if you've got someone like Patrick Beverley on the floor who's kind of more of just a jump shooter. If you can kind of keep Conley on him, and obviously you're going to have Royce O'Neal guarding a mix of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. But I think the Jazz, if they can just kind of keep him, if they can kind of concede a little bit of points to someone like Patrick Beverley or someone like that, and hopefully you can just kind of do what Jerry Sloan did with John Stockton back in the day and kind of find ways to manage his time so that he's not too much strain, but he's also impacting the game. Because I think one thing we've seen in these last few days is when Mike Conley's on the floor and both him and Donovan Mitchell are playing well together, the Jazz are really, really good. Mike Conley's assist numbers are just phenomenal, and he's just really found his perfect niche within this offense playing next to Donovan Mitchell. And so I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like Mike Conley's kind of essential to this Jazz team being able to beat this Clippers team, because we've seen these last two games what the Clippers can do when they really turn it on.
Absolutely. Mike Conley is going to be super important, because if you remember the games the Jazz have played against the Clippers over the last couple of years, the Jazz have done really well. They've won most of these games. I'd have to look up the exact record, but they've done really well. But this last one, the Clippers tried something different, and they put out a different lineup, and they just hounded Donovan Mitchell. They'd have Beverly just chase him everywhere and get under his skin and not give him any space. And Mitchell had a rough game, and it kind of threw off our entire offense. And so if we can have Mike Conley out there able to give Donovan some relief and let the two of them be kind of the two-headed monster that leads the attack, that can completely counteract that their strategy. But if he's not good to go, it could be hard for Donovan to carry the entire offensive load.
Yeah, it's really hard for Donovan for a seven game series, or it's as long as a seven game series, to carry the offense. And you mentioned Mike Conley, but also his pairing with Rudy Gobert, the minutes with him and Gobert, just the way that Conley is able to control the defense, and he just slices the defense apart, and then he either gets a layup or he tosses an effortless alley oop to Rudy Gobert, and you can get so many points in that. Those are things you can do to counter those runs that the Clippers might go on. You just get solid, easy points out of those pick and rolls with Rudy Gobert. So if Mike Conley's out there and able to do that a lot, then that's enormous, especially because they can do that with Conley, Gobert, and then a bunch of bench guys, and that's getting you solid minutes for a lot of the game.
One thing that got me really excited, so I wrote a thing about Donovan Mitchell last week, but it's interesting when you start deep diving in some of the numbers with some of the players, you see the story that another player is telling. And one of the things I realized when I was trying to show how much Donovan Mitchell moves the ball, which he does, Donovan Mitchell has like 8 potential assists per game right now, which is number 2 on the team. Mike Conley does about 16.5 potential assists per game, where it's like, wow. If the player makes the shot, that's an assist for Conley, which is kind of wild. And he's also the guy that actually passes the ball more than anyone else on the team. So the thing that's really nice about Mike Conley, that what that info tells me, is that when Mike Conley's on the floor, the ball is just moving, and the Jazz have that blender going. They're finding the best shot and they're getting good shots. And it's why, when Donovan and Mike were on the floor together, it's why they just kind of blew the doors off the Grizzlies. I mean, one of those games they had like an upper 40s 3-point shooting game, but I think like the last two they were in like the mid 30s. It wasn't even super high 3-point shooting. It's just that ball moves when the Jazz are on the floor, and Mike Conley's a big part of that. And like you said, that Rudy Gobert Mike Conley pick and roll is pretty lethal. I that first year Mike Conley was on the Jazz, it felt like that was the thing that he needed to figure out, was how to run that with Gobert. And he's definitely figured that out, because he's averaging 10 assists per game, I believe, in this playoff so far. And Rudy Gobert is benefiting from that, but also Utah's 3-point shooters. And that's, maybe we can talk about matchups now a little bit. That's one of the things that gets me kind of excited about Utah's ability to play the Clippers, because the Clippers have two great wing defenders. That's just undeniable. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are as good a tandem of wing defenders in the league, if not the best. But because the Jazz move the ball so much, they still probably have a chance to really take advantage and find open shots. Royce O'Neal to me is like one of those X factors for this series, because if Royce O'Neal can continually hit threes at the rate he was against the Grizzlies, to me, the Jazz are almost unguardable, because if you're, locking down Donovan Mitchell as as the number one threat, and then you're focusing on number two, Mike Conley, number three, Bogdanovich, at some point, someone's going to be open, and that's typically going to be Royce O'Neal. And if he's burying those open threes, it's kind of like the Jazz become just absolute offensive juggernaut to me. They just have so many weapons. And then you just take into account Rudy Gobert rolling to the rim. I think, I know that the Clippers are going to be really tough, and I'm not like guaranteeing a Jazz win, but I think the Jazz are going to be able to play against really anyone left in the playoffs. This might be their biggest test, to be honest.
I think an interesting thing with the Jazz going against the Clippers defense is that, you know, you have George and Kawhi, who are known for being decent perimeter defenders, even great, in case of Kawhi winning a defensive player of the year. Utah's point of attack isn't really at the forward positions where those guys are playing. Those guys are, you know, small forwards or shooting guards or kind of power forwards. I'm not sure where Paul George plays most of his minutes, but Utah's point of attack tends to be with the guards, with Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. And are, you know, 6'8", 6'7", forwards going to be able to keep up as much with, you know, the 6'1", 6'3", guards that the Jazz have? And it kind of goes both ways, where the Clippers, you know, how are the Jazz going to stop Kawhi and Paul George? It's kind of a two-way mismatch in terms of positions and point of attack. So it'll be interesting to see who kind of wins that mismatch.
Yeah, James, you mentioned Royce. I think he's going to be a huge key to the series. You were talking about his offense. His defense is going to be super important. I was just seeing on Twitter, you can credit at @NBA_Jeremy1. He looked up these tracking stats from NBA.com. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George combined over the last 2 years, so since they've been on the Clippers, when they've been guarded by Royce O'Neal, they have 36 points on 13 of 48 shooting, 5 for 21 from 3, a 35% true shooting percentage. So Royce has done super well as their primary defender. Obviously, we won't expect that kind of a performance for a whole series because, you know, Kawhi Leonard, he just in this series they just finished today, he scored 32 points a game on 61% from the field, 42% from three. So it's, we're not going to expect Royce to be able to keep him to 11 of 35 like he's done in the past. But if he can just get him down to around like something just reasonable, you know, get him to struggle a little bit, have a hard time to making those shots like Dallas could not do to him, then that could be huge because so much of their offense is dependent on Kawhi and Paul George and even other guys like Marcus Morris hitting some tough shots. If we can just keep making those even tougher and get them to miss a few of those shots, that can completely change the series.
Well, and it makes sense because, you know, Royce really is our best perimeter defender. It makes sense that he would actually do pretty well against them because that's the type of player he's kind of built to guard. Royce really struggles against like the quicker, smaller scoring guards like the...
Right. He couldn't guard Murray, but he can guard these guys.
Exactly. These guys aren't like Murray that are quick and can kind of shed off Royce. Like we've seen with other certain guards that just like Damian Lillard doesn't struggle too much with Royce. Although, you know, it's weird. Royce, sometimes it feels like he's on, because sometimes it feels like he's a streaky shooter. Sometimes it feels like he's a streaky defender to me at times too. And it's like, there'll be times where he looks incredible. And then there's times where you're just like, Royce, what was that? But against like a Kawhi Leonard and a Paul George, I think it feels like Royce can use his strength a little more. Whereas when he's guarding, like you said, like a Jamal Murray, Royce's strength is kind of negated, you know, his ability to kind of be physical with Kawhi. I feel like Royce actually can hold his own in the series. Like you said, no one's slowing down. Well, no one's stopping Kawhi, but I think Royce has shown he can at times slow him down. And they're going to try to switch Royce off of him. And so you're going to see a lot of Bojan moments guarding these guys. And Bojan's going to have to be at least an average defender, which I think he can. But yeah, we're going to need a big series from Royce O'Neal. And I think Bojan's another player too. Like we need big nights from Bojan Bogdanović. It's, you know, if Donovan Mitchell can keep moving the ball like he has been, which has been a really exciting thing, actually. I think in the last two games, Donovan had like 18 assists between the two. If Donovan is moving that ball after kind of penetrating and getting to the hoop, and then you've got Royce and Bojan making shots, I mean, there's a lot to be – it's like you said, there, you know, the Jazz have – there's a lot to be worried about with the Clippers, but if you're the Clippers, there's a lot to worry about with Utah, and Utah has been playing just really good basketball. The Grizzlies were not a pushover, and the Jazz, when they had Donovan back, just looked unstoppable. And so – I'm actually pretty excited. It's going to be interesting. Maybe after all this excitement, we see the Jazz have a game one like they did against the Grizzlies, and it won't start out like we hope. But I think Utah has had enough time to kind of work out their kinks a little bit with Donovan Mitchell getting back, and I think the rest does help a lot. But I guess that's another question. Do you think the rest helps? Does it cause some rust? What do you guys think?
That's the eternal argument, rest versus rust. We like the rest for Mike Conley, but you know, there could be an aspect with the Clippers where maybe they're on a roll because, you know, they lost the first two games of their series, but then they won 4 of 5. You know, if you chop off the first two games, the Clippers did the same things to the Mavericks as we did to the Grizzlies. So, You know, that could be an advantage for them. Kawhi's getting into his rhythm. So we just kind of have to hope that the rest was good for Conley and also Donovan Mitchell with his ankle. Just kind of hope that rest was good for them, and then you can get right back into rhythm in game one at home.
Yeah, I think with game one in the Grizzlies series, it's hard for me to blame that on rust when I think the main issue was the whole Donovan Mitchell thing. So that's always, like you said, it's an eternal argument. We're never really going to know, or maybe someone's done some good research on it I haven't seen yet, but I think hopefully it'll just be a good thing for us to get, like you guys, like Jason, you said, getting both Conley and Mitchell more healthy. That should be an advantage for us to have this game being on Tuesday rather than today if Dallas had won game six.
I'm trying to look. One of the things the Jazz really struggled with against the Grizzlies was that they turned the ball over a lot. And I feel like I don't know what – I'm trying to look this up. But I don't know how good the Clippers are with creating turnovers. I know the Grizzlies, that's one of the things they're best at, and the Jazz struggle with it a little bit here and there. Bojan especially, but when they kind of locked in, Donovan Mitchell came back and it really did kind of infuse them with confidence. I really feel like Donovan has taken things to another level. One of the things I've noticed is like the Jazz looked like rudderless a little bit in that first game. They just looked like they didn't quite know who was going to take control at points. And it's part of why I just felt like that first game, they lost their identity when Donovan Mitchell was out. And when Donovan Mitchell came back, I know Rudy Gobert, people will argue who's the most important player and blah, blah, blah. But I really feel like when Donovan's on the floor, it really infuses this team with a lot of energy and he brings kind of a leadership on the floor that they really need. And I just, you know, but on top of just that, I felt like Donovan Mitchell's play has been so good. His playmaking has been just phenomenal. And his scoring in that final game was, I mean, Utah just blew the doors off of the Grizzlies that last game. But the other games, Donovan Mitchell was passing the ball. Mike Conley was just absolutely shredding the Grizzlies defense. And, you know, I know it's Luka Doncic and he's, you know, top 10, top 5 player, whatever. But the Jazz can replicate a lot of what they did because the Jazz have a lot more playmakers on the floor that can run a pick and roll. The Jazz know how to attack weaknesses on different teams and then exploit them. I think the Jazz can look at that series with the Mavericks and really kind of find some weaknesses in that Clipper defense. One of them is that Serge Ibaka is not playing. And I think that was kind of quietly a big deal for the Clippers against the Mavericks because their rim protection just wasn't as good. I just hope Serge Ibaka doesn't come back. If he can stay off the floor, that would be really great. But we'll see. I just think the Jazz have a lot of opportunities to shred the Clippers. And you know, the Clippers can switch all they want, but it really feels like Utah's kind of figured out how to attack those switching defenses and they can still take advantage.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Ibaka. I think that's a huge key to the series is the big men on both of these teams, because we know that the Jazz will be playing Gobert for heavy minutes, and then when he's not playing, Favors will be playing. And Favors had a really great series. He's looked great against Memphis, much better than he did throughout the regular season. And so then if the Clippers don't have Ibaka, or we don't know, last time he he was listed as doubtful, so maybe he's close. But they've got Zubats, and then are they going to go small? Will they play Morris or, you know, whoever you want to say, Batum as their big guy? Because they've done that against the Jazz and seen some success. Are they going to play small or are they going to play big? Either way, the Jazz are going to have to figure it out because they're going to play big. And, you know, Dallas was doing it. They were starting Boban for much of the series, so they can see how they did it. But it's going to be huge to see if the Jazz can figure out how to abuse the smaller players. If they're trying to guard Gobert with a forward, how are they going to be able to take advantage of it?
I think a big aspect of that will be if Rudy can get a lot of good offensive rebounds, because Boban was making the Clippers look like children at times with just getting offensive rebound after offensive rebound. I don't know how in the end how efficient that was. I'd have to go back and see if that really made an impact, but it certainly felt like it did, especially in the games where the Mavericks were winning, as they'd get those extra chances. And Boban was able to do just whatever he wanted because the guys he's going up against are 6'8 and whatnot. So if Gobert can dominate those matchups, which sometimes he has, sometimes he hasn't during the regular season, if he's able to get all those rebounds, then that's game over for the Clippers. You can't give the Jazz that many chances.
Yeah, it's really important for the Jazz to get those offensive rebounds because they turn the ball over and they don't force turnovers. So if they want to have anywhere near the same amount of possessions as the Clippers, they're going to need to get offensive boards and not allow them to get offensive boards. That's our only way to get extra possessions. So that's going to be huge. And I think Favors may show up big time. I'm going to predict he's going to have one of those games where he just can't be stopped on the offensive glass, and he's going to save us a game with that.
Favors is one of those guys that has really just taken it to another level in the playoffs. It really makes me feel like, Derek, I wish at some point during the season you would have let us know that you're kind of like going in cruise control a tiny bit, because I said a lot of nice things on Twitter about it. So it would have been nice to know that you were, you know, not using too much of your gas tank during the season. So it's nice to see that Favors is really going. Speaking of, I was looking up on here, I'm on NBA.com, the stats page. So steals per game, Memphis is number two in the playoffs at 8. So they were stealing the ball from the Jazz a lot. Utah's actually 14 out of 16 at 5.2. The Clippers are number 6, 6.9 steals per game. So maybe the Jazz won't be turning the ball over quite as much. Go ahead.
I was looking on Cleaning the Glass, and I've got it pulled up right now. The Clippers, according to them, were 18th in turnovers, like forced, like their turnover percentage they get. 18th, so slightly below average. So not great. Maybe they won't take advantage as much. Maybe I should look up what the Grizzlies were. This is for the regular season.
I'm not on Cleaning the Glass. I'm on NBA.com, but it looks like the Clippers are pretty good about not turning it over. But the interesting thing about that is Utah's one of the worst in terms of creating turnovers. The Jazz just don't.
Yeah, I was saying that the Clippers' defense is below average in creating turnovers. So the Jazz are 30th, they're dead last, and the Clippers are 18th. So these are two teams that don't really force a lot of turnovers. The Grizzlies, for reference, in the regular season were 7th best at creating turnovers.
Yeah, this may be a series that's just going to be played in the half court, because both of these teams are just half court teams. The Jazz have the best half court defense in the league, whereas the Clippers have the second best offensive half court offense in the league. So it's going to be elite half court offense versus an elite half court defense. And neither of them, like we're saying, are forcing a lot of turnovers. So it's mostly going to be played slowly, most likely.
Oh yeah. It's going to be a very like grinded out, and you know, I'm not seeing it right here, but there's just the transition. It's just not going to be a fast, I mean, it's going to be just who is really executing and who is taking advantages of mismatch. It's going to be a very like chess match type series. Actually, when you kind of look at the way they both play, Kawhi doesn't like to go out and run and run and run, and Utah doesn't really run a lot either. It's going to be a nail biter. I think we're going to have a lot of close games. You're going to have, and you know, who knows, maybe the Jazz will surprise us and just like have an incredible 3-point shooting series. But let's see, 3-point percentage. Utah's number 4 in the playoffs at 40% from 3. The Clippers are 7th at 37% for the Clippers. So both, you know, the thing is if you're looking for little advantages, this is, you know, I was on Twitter and people are starting to already get kind of nervous and you know, I would have rather had Dallas. And I think you do probably prefer Dallas. Luka Doncic is a problem for everyone. But you know, this is what happens. You're in the second round. You're just going to end up playing good teams. If it wasn't the Clippers, it was going to be someone else, and there's going to be problems with every team. And at this point, you're pretty evenly matched. Kawhi Leonard's probably the best player in the series. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's going to argue that, but I don't think Paul George is much better player than if at all than Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert might be the number 2 and 3, whichever you pick, and then maybe Paul George. I think this is a pretty evenly matched series. Those four guys right there are, you know, you can toss it up however you want between 2, 3, and 4. But then you start going and looking at player 5 and 6 and 7, and Utah has a lot of those guys. Mike Conley is probably the 5th best guy in this series. And then you can argue Bojan Bogdanovic, or, you know, on the Clippers, there's not a ton of guys outside of Kawhi and Paul George that really scare me. I know Jackson's had some good games, and he's had some nights where he's shot it pretty well. But Patrick Beverley has been someone that's caused Utah issues before with guarding Donovan Mitchell. And so, I don't know. There's going to be some mismatches that I think Utah's going to be able to take advantage. And I hope Quinn Snyder's able to kind of find those and take advantage like he did against the Grizzlies. Is there anyone you think the Jazz can really pick on? Like, who's the Michael Porter Jr. of the Clippers that the Jazz can really attack and focus on?
Oh, I think that's got to be Reggie Jackson. If Donovan Mitchell, if they're switching everything, I want Donovan to be hunting Jackson every time he can. I don't think he's going to be able to stay in front of him. I think he'll get in foul trouble. Also, Beverly, if Donovan can play smart like he's done against Dylan Brooks with a super aggressive defender and just get him into foul trouble, their switching defense can go from our weakness into our strength. If he's able to play that smart, I think both of those guys can be exploited.
I agree. I think Donovan is, I mean, there's so many different things that could, so many different keys, but Donovan in that series just looked like he was in complete control. And don't know if it was the ankle, if he's still getting kind of in game shape, but it looked to me like Donovan was playing really kind of a slower, controlled game. Like it looked like he was really like, he knew what he was going to do on every possession. And he honestly toyed with Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks was like, he had no shot at guarding Donovan. I know Dylan Brooks is bad at, you know, not fouling. And so Donovan knew that and took advantage. But I think Dylan Brooks was good warm up for, like you said, like a Jackson or Pat Beverly or any of these guys on the Clippers. The other guy I think that is kind of an X factor for the Jazz, if Jordan Clarkson has a really good series shooting the ball, I think the Jazz win this in like 5 games, because there's a point where the Jazz have so many weapons and so many points of attack that if Jordan Clarkson's coming off the bench and shooting like 40-something% from 3, then the Jazz are just extending leads against the Clipper bench. And I don't know, if he has a really good series, it makes the Jazz almost unfair. Is there anyone like that that you guys think could be the difference?
Well, it probably is Clarkson. You could also maybe put in Joe Ingles as another guy, but I think Clarkson specifically works because he was the one who had kind of a mediocre, below average. He's kind of been on a downturn since the kind of the end of the regular season. Yeah, I'm trying to look up what his shooting percentages were, and they weren't great.
Oh, they definitely downturned.
Yeah, so like 40% overall, 23.8. This is just the postseason, and the Jazz won that in 5 games. So like if he, you know, turns up to like 45 and 35, something to that effect, then yeah, that just becomes unfair, because just like you said, you know, the starters might battle it out to maybe even, maybe the Jazz get an advantage. And then Clarkson comes out and he puts up like 12 points at the end of a first quarter or something like that, just goes off. Then suddenly the Jazz are up 7 or 8 when the starters come back in. That's just a huge advantage. If the Clippers keep having to come back from that, that's more and more energy exerted by the starters and more that they would have to outplay the Jazz starters, which, like we said, it's kind of an even matchup. So expecting the starters to be that much better, that's not something the Clippers can count on night in and night out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Clarkson and Ingles are definitely those two, because it's really, you look at the minutes that the rotation that Quinn Snyder played in the playoffs, he didn't add more minutes to our stars. He didn't give Mitchell or Conley or Gobert more minutes. Really, it was pretty, all of them were right around 30 to 32. What changed was that most of it stayed pretty much the same. He tried to keep it pretty even. The only other guys off the bench that are going to play serious minutes are Ingles and Clarkson, both going to be playing 25 to 30 minutes per game, with Favors and maybe Niang playing 15-ish. But Ingles, I mean, we've all seen on Twitter that everyone's throwing out the memes about him and Paul George, including myself. But we don't he didn't look like that kind of Joe Ingles in this last series. So is he going to be that Joe Ingles this time? It's a really big question, because the Joe Ingles from that OKC series is a really, really good player, and he's a danger to the opponent on both sides of the court, because he can really get into a player's head, and then he can be hitting threes and dropping dimes on offense. And so if he gets his swagger and he gets his trash talk going and he's making threes, that completely changes the feel of the game for the Jazz.
I totally agree. I think those two, if Ingles and Clarkson have a nice series, then Utah really, I mean, that's where you know, Utah is just really great. And I don't know how much George Niang is going to play, but if he can just, you know, he's one of those guys that if the Jazz are going with a shorter rotation, you probably don't see Niang on the floor. But in the minutes that he's on the floor, if he's hitting threes as well, Utah, there's just not a lot of weaknesses to Utah. Utah doesn't have, like, beyond Royce O'Neal, a lot of wing defenders. I think Joe Ingles is getting a little older, where he's not quite the same that he used to be. But because of Rudy Gobert and what he does at the rim, Utah can still just really cause a lot of havoc. I think Kawhi's going to have a nice series. But I don't know. It's going to be a fun series to watch, to be honest. A lot of time, like, you think, oh, Kawhi Leonard, he can do this. But then there are things Utah can do with the Clippers. I think Utah can scheme with the Clippers a little bit better than they could with other certain teams. Like, the Suns actually kind of scare me a tiny bit more than the Clippers do. Because I feel like there are things the Jazz can do with the Clippers and match up with them pretty well. Well, guys, thank you for going on. And did anyone else have anything they wanted to add as a final, prediction for this series? I guess that's how we can end it. What do you guys predict for this series against the Jazz and the Clippers?
So I think I'd probably predict Jazz in 6. If they get some really good performances, they could push to 5. But I'll say 6 just because you can't count out the talents of the Clippers, but I think it's very possible the Clippers could come out, maybe punch the Jazz in the mouth, and then the Jazz just outlast them. Because something that I just kind of want to point out is that how much the Clippers have already had to work in these playoffs, and the Jazz haven't even really put the pedal to the metal yet. Donovan Mitchell has one game where he's played more than 30 minutes, and like Rudy Gobert is averaging like barely 30 minutes, Mike Conley as well. They haven't pushed their playoff rotations yet. You know, in last year's first round, Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell averaged 40 minutes a game if you exclude the blowout game. So when Utah really puts it to the metal, then they could just, you know, they can do just about whatever they want. So I think the Jazz, they're the better team, and I think they'll come out on top. Even if the Clippers start out strong, they'll kind of fade in the end as they get more and more tired against a relatively fresh Utah Jazz team.
Mm-hmm. I think, for me, I'm going to go Jazz in 7. We may be homers. I don't know if we're all going to choose Jazz, but I think this game's going, this series is going 7 regardless of the winner. I think it's just two really good teams. The Clippers didn't have the same their record wasn't right up there with the Jazz, but they had a really high net rating. They were, and they had streaks where they were just really, really good. And I think this is kind of going to be a clash of two teams that are similar in a few ways. And it's going to be, I think it's going to be a close games throughout. I think in the end, Donovan Mitchell is going to have a big series. He's always done well against the Clippers. He's averaged 26 points a game against them for his whole career, including rookie seasons. And I don't think that they're going to have much of an answer for him, even though they have their own stars that we may not be able to stop. I think Donovan Mitchell is going to have a huge series and really kind of show up on the big stage.
I kind of agree. I think the Jazz win in five. I think this is a series where all the people online and all the bloggers and all the people that don't watch a lot of Jazz realize how good Rudy Gobert is. I think, you know, we talk about Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley, but I think Rudy Gobert has a chance to just be a monster in this series. He's going to take away so much at the rim. And like you said, Rudy hasn't played huge minutes, you know, and if Quinn starts putting, and I hope he does, I hope Quinn plays him 36 to 40 minutes per game in this series. I think Utah can really give the Clippers some problems. There's just not anyone on that team that really challenges Rudy too much. I know Zubac can probably play a little more against the Jazz than he did against the Mavericks because Rudy doesn't stretch the floor like Porzingis does. But at the same time, Zubac also, you know, is going to have to deal with someone who actually rim runs and who actually defends the rim and who actually rebounds, which, you know, the Mavericks just don't really have a big that does that. I mean, Boban is huge, but he's not a presence like Rudy Gobert is. And Porzingis is like the joke everyone's saying on Twitter. He's 5'27". He just is not a big man. And so Rudy is just going to, I think, cause a lot of havoc, and he's going to have some big plays in this series. And I think it's really kind of a coming out party for Rudy Gobert and, like you said, Donovan Mitchell too. But the Jazz are really good. Like, the thing that drives me nuts, and I'll just end on this, I guess, is the Jazz didn't accidentally have the best record in the NBA. You know, that doesn't just happen by accident. You know, it feels like no one has Donovan Mitchell in all NBA. Rudy Gobert is going to be third team NBA, and the Jazz had the best record in the league. It blows my mind a little bit how I don't know how people thought the Jazz got the best record. I guess, I don't know. Maybe I don't know, but I think what we're going to find out in this playoff series is that the Jazz are legitimately one of, if not the best team in the NBA. So that's my prediction. It's in five for the Jazz. Well, guys, thank you for coming on. That was fun. I'm going to get this up on the site for all our readers. Guys, make sure if you haven't listened to the podcast before, go subscribe to it on iTunes. We need to do this more regularly, but you know what? We'll do it when we can. But what you can do is go subscribe to it when these come out, you can listen. Calvin, Jason, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.